ATM, BULOVA, Bulova Watch Time. WABC, New York, 880 on your dial.
Monday, December 29th, Romo Seltzer presents Bob Pop, The Voice of the People, conducted by Park Johnson and Wally Butterworth. Tonight, Romo Seltzer brings you a special air raid defense program from the heart of New York City. With us are civilians and municipal authorities who are straining every nerve and muscle for total defense against total war. And as our two bus poppers, Park Johnson and Wally Butterworth, step forward to take charge of this important defense meeting, the entire crowd roars,
"Yes, sir." And the first box popper is a neighbor of mine. In fact, he's senior air raid warden of the post in which I live. He's one of the scores of thousands of men and women who are giving generously of themselves for me and for you. He's Mr. Hubert N. Phillips of Great Neck. Mr. Phillips, do you think it's possible that New York and other eastern cities will be bombed?
Possible? I should say so. Probable. If we don't think it's possible, it's more than likely that we will be bombed. So we're trying to be prepared and beat them to it.
You, as an area warden, that's a very direct statement.
Very definite.
Very interesting. Now, what's your regular business, Mr. Phillips?
I'm in the paper manufacturing business, the International Paper Company.
Just
a little outfit.
A little outfit? If I know my stuff, that's one of the biggest there is. And now, as a good strict man, who would you say was the first warden, Mr. Phillips?
Warden?
Got to start off with a little light stuff here. Now, that he's way back yonder, and I'll tell you this about him. He failed.
A warden is
as far back as you can go now.
Let's see. A warden is a safe keeper.
That's right.
How about Keene? Wasn't he his brother?
Am I my brother's keeper?
That's
you
right.
are
That's
very
right.
good.
That's
I knew
right.
you were a good church man. I'm glad you got it. Well, now you and thousands of other wardens, of course, are literally your neighbor's keepers. I know some of the work that you've been doing. But tell me, what are the qualifications for an air raid warden?
An air raid warden should be a reliable, responsible person. Fit physically.
Uh-huh.
And able to command the respect and the following of his neighbors.
Well, that sums
that
it up.
That just about fills the bill, I think.
Now, all the air raid wardens men?
No, I'd say about 40% of them are women.
40% women?
40%, yes.
Well, are women as good as air raid wardens as men?
After telling you those qualifications, you ought to know that your Louise would probably be just as good an air raid warden as you are.
I think Louise Nelson would be a better one than I am. You're right about that. Well, now, Mr. Phillips, a few quick questions about wardening. Not gardening, wardening.
Wardening is the word.
Do you wardens have police power?
No, absolutely none. The only authority that we have is that which we can gain through the respect that we gain from our neighbors. We have to...
Your neighbors...
We
your
have
neighbors
to earn our authority.
Well, that's the best authority in the world is when you earn it, isn't it? I know that organizing and training, such as you've been doing... all of you wardens have been doing is rather hard work. And by the way, how hard have you worked since December the 8th?
Well, it hasn't seemed hard because we've been so interested in it that we've just forgotten everything else. The hours have been very long. We've worked every single night since December 7th, with the exception, of course, of Christmas. We laid off a little bit there.
Every night?
Every single night.
Several meetings a night, I guess, huh?
And Saturdays and Sundays.
Mm-hmm. Well, don't you ever get into the laughs?
Oh, yes.
And all that hard work?
Of course we do. Well, there was one case where a woman registered as her qualifications the fact that she could run fast and she could climb trees.
What did you do with her?
Well, we sort of labeled her Mrs. Tarzan. We didn't call her that ourselves, but we think she's going to make a mighty good warden.
Well, that's fine, Mr. Willis. And I just want to say that every man and woman in civilian defense is really giving a lot.
Well,
really are.
They're enjoying it, and I'm sure that more and more of us are going to do it throughout these years to come. I don't think it's just a short-time proposition.
Well, I want to say this, that I don't think that any of us can outgive the men in uniform, do you?
Not a chance.
And Bromo Seltzer is awfully happy to give you an air raid warning, a little New Year's present, we might call it. First of all, a briefcase to keep all your notes and your instructions in.
Oh,
can you use that?
Many thanks.
And second, a little entertainment in between times when you're not working, this portable radio. Can you use that?
That is grand. I'll tell you what.
What were you going to say?
I'm going to use that in equipping my warden post. Parks, and thank you and Roma Salter.
Fine. Thank you very much, Chief. Now, before Wallace steps in, Bill Bivens has a message that may save you needless suffering in the next few days.
Friends, when you have a headache, you're usually grumpy and ill-tempered, no appetite, no ambition. It's hard to concentrate. You just want to sort of lie down and take things easy. Well, if you'll ask your doctor why, chances are he'll tell you that's because a headache may be more than just a pain in the head. Your nerves are often affected and your stomach upset. It's because a headache may upset you three ways that you need three-way relief. And when this happens, that's why Bromo Seltzer gives you speedy relief. Not one, but three ways at the same time. First, it relieves the pain of the headache itself. Second, it helps calm nerves. And third, it helps settle upset stomach. And believe me, friends, you'll never know the relief you can expect from Bromo Seltzer until you try it. So next time you have a headache, don't go on suffering these miseries. Try Bromo Seltzer. Use it as directed. And just see how quickly it helps you feel more fit and fine. More like your old self again. Remember, only Bromo Seltzer can give you Bromo Seltzer results. All right, Wally, who's next on Air Raid Defense?
He is George Scott of the New York Fire Department and was one of three men chosen to observe at first hand the air raids and the results of bombings over London. This information has been distributed throughout the country. Welcome, Mr. Scott. How long were you in London?
I was 2.5 months in London.
When was that?
That was from October 22nd, and we returned to New York on January 19th, or about the 14th.
I want you to describe these bombs to us. First of all, let's talk about the incendiary bomb. How was it fired from a plane, and how do they strike?
Well, the incendiary bomb is dropped from a plane in a basket. It's called the Molotov Spread Basket, and there are from 36 to 50 bombs in a basket.
Mm-hmm.
And they ignite on contact. And the chief ingredient is magnesium with a small charge of thermit. And it burns at about 4,500 degrees and then dwindles down to about 2,500.
That's pretty hot, isn't it?
Certainly is, red hot.
How many incendiaries can they release in a single raid?
Well, each large bombing plane can carry about 2,000 in incendiary bombs.
And with 100 planes, that's a lot of bombs, isn't it, when they split up into 40?
Certainly is. You got to keep moving then.
Well, will they penetrate a fireproof building?
No, not a fireproof building, but a frame building it will.
How long do they burn?
Well, they burn for about 20 minutes, unless they are checked.
In what way?
Well, a spray of water is the best means. That accelerates the burning, and the bomb burns itself out in about 4 minutes.
Are they so hot that they'll come from one floor down through the other?
Oh, yes. It's burning through an entire building, setting fire to the whole building.
And that's within a five-minute period, if you're not
astray.
Not on top of it. I'd like to know something about this landmine bomb the Nazis have been using.
Well, that's a high explosive bomb. It's about 13 feet high and about 2 feet in diameter, and it comes from a plane on a parachute. And the parachute is about 27 feet in diameter.
How fast does it fall?
Well, it falls about 40 miles an hour.
Hmm. When it hits, what happens?
When it hits, it goes off on contact, and there's a terrific blast and destruction. I've seen one of these come down in London, and it either demolished or seriously damaged about 500 homes.
One bomb?
One bomb.
I don't want to be near that. I understand also they're using an oil bomb over there, Mr. Scott. Will you tell us a little about that?
Well, the oil bomb is something similar to a big drum. It has a mechanical charge on it there, and it goes off on contact.
Mm-hmm.
And it carries about 55 gallons of crude oil, and oil that's been drained out of airplanes and so forth. And when it explodes, it throws this flaming oil about 500 feet.
500 feet?
Exactly.
And that's all burning, of course.
All burning.
If it hits a home, what happens?
Well, the home goes up in the flames.
Is London really hard hit?
Yes, it certainly is. I can truthfully say that there isn't a building in London that hasn't been damaged in some way or another.
Well, in the midst of all of this, did you find any amusing experiences over there?
Well, yes, they have their humorous sides to them, too. There was one incident over there. This gentleman went into the police station after a terrific raid, and he told them that there was an unexploded bomb in his home.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, he had a couple of drinks before he went in there.
Yes.
And they told him to go home and sleep it off.
Yeah.
Well, about a half hour later, he came into the station house carrying the bomb in his arms, and he put it on his desk, and he said, "Here, maybe now you'll believe me."
Well, what happened in the station?
Well, the cops actually boiled out of the window.
I don't wonder.
One more thing. How will we profit by these London experiences?
Well, this is not a general knowledge, but the English had about 30 firemen in Finland during the Russian invasion in 1939. And they brought their experiences back to London, and they formed a defense plan in London on these experiences.
And we'll do the same thing with what
that's
the British
right.
have done.
The only thing is decentralization. Like, you take, for instance, our fire alarm telegraph system, that is centralized.
Yes.
Well, we have drawn up plans to decentralize it, and we can put that into effect within very short notice.
Well, thank you so much, Mr. Scott. And as a nice reward and New Year's gift, Bromo Seltzer wants you to have this lovely, fine, splendid wristwatch and five nice cartons of cigarettes. Your face. All right, Hog. Thank you very much. That's fine. Thank you very much.
Okay, Wally. Folks, you know there is no weak sex in this country, and there never was. Our next Vox Papa is a wife and a mother who, like many, many others, is doing a real job in our defense setup. He is Mrs. Walter M. Drury of New York City. How are you, Missouri?
Very well, thank you, Mr. Johnson.
Glad you could get off and come down. Tell me, what is that uniform you have on?
It's the Red Cross Motor Corps uniform.
It's very snappy looking and very efficient looking, too. Tell me, what is the work of the Red Cross Motor Corps?
Well, we are the transportation for the Red Cross. And we do various work. It's all volunteer work.
Mm-hmm. All of it volunteer. We do defense work, of course.
Yes, we do defense work, but one of our chief work is the carrying of patients to the hospitals, from the outpatients to hospitals and clinics. And we do that in peace times and in wartime.
In fact, you've always
we never give that up. Mm-hmm. Our defense work goes on to do the blood bank. We have a mobile unit and go out with that, and that goes within about 100 miles around New York.
You mean you carry them to and from hospitals and all like that?
Yes.
We
drive the mobile unit out to the blood bank.
Oh, yeah.
And when the girls get out there, they have learned to take different types of blood and take temperatures and blood pressures and things of that kind.
What else?
And then we do the production unit. We carry the parcels from the Red Cross to the workroom, and from the workroom.
I hope you're carrying a lot of them nowadays.
Yeah, we carry a good many. Then we do canteen work, and we have a mobile unit for that, and we take the canteens down to the canteen workers down right now. Mm-hmm. We're going down to the Army and Navy recruiting station.
Mm.
We do a good deal of that right now.
Talking about canteens and that day, is that by any chance a truck that you drive?
It's a small truck that we drive.
And you drive one of them?
Yes, I do. And it's very interesting and a little heavy and a little different from...
Tell me some of the requirements for the Red Cross Motor Corps.
Well, we have to be a competent driver. And then we have to own a car. And we have to supply our own gasoline, our own uniform. We have to have physical examination, and we have to take certain courses in first aid and mechanics and that sort of thing.
Mechanics? You know which end of a bolt a nut goes on and all that kind of stuff?
I didn't know a nut from a bolt. But I've learned, and though I've driven for a good many years, until I took this course, I didn't know what made the wheels go round.
This time, the first interceptor command, New York City, requests that all radio broadcast stations, including this tail, that the time when signal was received, this test will continue at certain intervals. If it is ever necessary to close broadcast stations due to internet related attack, this station will make a short announcement of the fact when it goes off air. This is only a test. Thank you. We now resume our scheduled program.
What is your regular business?
I'm a fashion editor of Cosmopolitan Magazine. I write a column, fashion and fiction, each month.
Yes, I've often read it. What is your job for the Army?
I have several jobs down there, and one of the jobs I like to know is to receive messages from the observation post that is scattered all over the New York and vicinity areas, telling us the position of planes flying in the air at all times. These jobs are covered 24 hours a day, you know.
Well, what is the distance between these observation posts?
They're about 6 miles apart.
Well, will you tell us how an observer reports that he wants to call in to you, tell you a plane is flying over here?
Yes, when he spots a plane, he has a telephone right to his observation post.
Yes.
And he flashes into information center. He has a direct wire into it. And here is a typical example of a code message that we receive. Flash. Three multi-motors. Very high. Steam. And this is post in code. North, south, north, 5 miles. Flying northeast.
And, of course, that's checked at every 6 miles.
Yes,
in other words, almost every 2 minutes.
Yes, it is. And then we relay the message inside Information Center so that all the Army and Navy get the information as quickly as it is humanly possible.
Well, tell me, is it possible for me to fly a plane, we'll say, from Boston to Washington without the Army knowing where I am almost any minute?
No, I'm so weak, Mr. Butterfield. You couldn't do that.
They've been
spotted every 6 miles, yes.
Well, where are these headquarters?
You mean where I work?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I can't tell you.
That is the security.
That's the security.
And no one knows what that is, but the people who are working there. What type of women are doing this?
Oh, every type of woman. There's debutantes, housewives, stenographers, clerks, girls who work all day long and come down and work all night long.
Well, it has
working side by side.
You associate with handsome soldier boys?
Oh, yes.
Have a lot of fun down there, brighten up your work?
Yes, they do. Very pleasant. Very attractive Army and Navy boys around.
Is the Army seeking volunteers?
Oh, yes, we are. We'd like to have lots more people.
How does one get in?
Well, any woman who has enough time, say she can even give a couple of days a week, if she will apply at her local defense agency, such as the American Union Voluntary Services or the Red Cross Station.
Good.
For the information.
Good. Now, Miss Russell, who was America's first and most famous defense observer?
Defense observer?
Look out for that. You have to be back.
Wasn't a boy up around Boston, was he?
He sure was.
Wasn't Paul Revere?
He was Paul Revere, absolutely. And I might say that your group right now are the modern Paul Revere's, looking out for Uncle Sam, for Mr. Adolph and little Benny, and the Sukiyaki Sap, if I may say so. Now, with the compliments of Romo Seltzer, may we thank you so much for coming up and give you this lovely portable radio, and I understand it is a Chanel selection of curtains.
Lovely, Mr. Butterfield.
Well,
thank you.
Before our next guest steps up, I want to get personal with all you ladies listening in at home. Confidentially, is this the way you feel right about now?
Oh, I'm so tired from the heartache, Simon, I could scream. All those cries and that noise.
Fiona, for mercy's sake, will you keep quiet? You know I have a splitting headache. Oh.
Well, ma'am, if that's the way you feel, then my advice is, it's almost helpful.
And you know, friends, that's really sound, sensible advice. For Bromo Seltzer gives quick, effective, three-way relief. Not only does it relieve the pain of headache, it also helps settle upset stomach, help calm the jumpy nerves which so often accompany a headache. Now, of course, if you have persistent recurring headaches, you should see a physician. But for quick, comforting relief and that occasional splitting headache, take Bromo Seltzer. Use only according to directions on the label. And in no time at all, you'll be saying,
"Why, I feel so much better, I can't believe it's me." It's all right, Junior. Bang on your drum, do everything. I feel wonderful.
All right, Clark Johnson, who's our next guest on the Air Raid Defense Program?
That is, dear. Modern warfare has put the fire department in the front lines with the armed services. So, from the front line of the New York Fire Department, Assistant Chief of Department in Command, John J. McCarthy. Mr. McCarthy, we are all chief, I should say. We're awfully glad to have you with us tonight.
I'm happy to be with you.
You're training a lot of auxiliary firemen around New York, aren't you?
Yes, we are.
About how many have you trained so far?
Why, up to November 6th of this year, we trained 25,000 men at a 60-hour, 15-week course.
Mm-hmm.
And since November 11th, they've taken in over 22,000 men who are now in training. So that will go
47.
At the present time, we have 47, at least 47,000 men.
How many more do you want?
We need a minimum of at least 60,000 to adequately protect the city of the size of New York.
That's a whole lot of men in addition to all the other firemen you got, too. What kind of training are you giving them?
We're giving them the practice of training that every probationary fireman receives. We can't expect to make finished firemen of them because firefighting is a profession that takes years to learn. But nevertheless, we're giving the elements and the sufficient of those to qualify them to back up the cavemen if and when they're attacked.
Well, they are volunteers, of course.
Volunteers, more walks of life.
The civilian defense. Have you got enough, or do you want more to volunteer?
Oh, no, no. We are judge of everybody's man between you.
He's right. Frontline stuff is right. I was right about that, wasn't I?
You're correct.
Chief, how about cities throughout the country, mid-continent, and right over where a year ago everybody thought we were safe? How about it? Do they need to add additional firemen or give a fireman at this time, would you say?
I'd say that in view of the fact the enemy has used the element of surprise so extensively in this war, that no community in the United States can feel safe, and I recommend and I strongly urge that every community have an auxiliary fire force.
That's right, and it's amazing, and also, of course, for civilian defense.
Yes.
Full unit. What are some of the hazards that you run into around New York in connection with your firework, anticipated firework in connection with the raid?
Well, from the experience brought back by our seamen from London, we learned that the greatest danger lies in the attic top floors of buildings where people will want to store about everything that they don't need in the home, particularly things of a combustible nature.
Such as old love letters kept for 40 years, Chief.
Oh,
now's a good time to get rid of those, isn't it?
That's very true.
How about blackouts? Do you worry about them at all, your department?
The fire department is concerned about blackouts to this extent that the response of the fire apparatus naturally will be retarded seriously because of the lack of street lighting. And we find that where the response is retarded, the fires will take much more time to spread.
Chief, you can just bet that I'm going to get off the street in a hurry when that alarm comes, which I hope it doesn't. But if it does, I'm getting off in a hurry. But Chief, I wish we had a lot more time. We appreciate your taking time off and coming down. And for a fireman, imagine this. Como Seltzer has something that makes a fire. It's a desk cigar lighter and a mahogany humidor to keep those big fat cigars in.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Now, Park, for this guest, we assume that the Army has sent out an air raid alert, and let's see what happens. Mr. Thomas Richardson is the zone warden of the 19th Precinct here in New York. Having received the air raid call, how many wardens to protect people's lives can be put on the streets of the city, Mr. Richardson? Between 180 and 190,000. 190,000, what do they do?
They protect the people in the sense that they stop traffic, get people out of the cars, conduct them to safety, safest place they can find, observe what may be happening in their particular post, report that to the report center and the nearest phone.
That's
the police department. Or send a messenger if they can't find the phone that's in operation.
Are there enough air raid wardens?
No, sir. We want 5 and 6 and 7 times the number that we have. The more that we have, the less work for those of us who have been on the job for a long time.
What has been your training in this work?
All of the wardens that signed up prior to December 7th attended 5 lectures given by the police department and experts of other city departments. They also attended lectures that were organized by the zone and sector wardens in their district.
They get first aid?
They took, they were offered a first aid course, and over 60% of the wardens in the eastern part of the city took those first aid courses.
What's their uniform?
Their armband, their whistle, and their flashlight.
Well, that's perfectly all right, and I'm sure everybody will obey an air warden when he sees him on the street. Now, will there be any distribution of gas masks to the population here?
We understand that gas masks will be given to many people that they have gas masks for.
Will they be furnished or sold?
I understand they'll be furnished.
They are quite reasonably priced, aren't they?
I understand so, but the latest information we have is that the Congress is appropriating money to buy gas masks and other equipment.
Well, that's a wonderful thing. Now, what is the most expensive unit of defense that we have in this country?
I think the $35 million battleship.
I think you're right. Now, what is the cheapest unit of defense? Look out for yourself now.
The 10-cent stamp. Yes, sir. The 10-cent defense stamp is the cheapest, and the battleship is the largest.
Now, what have you to say about that? Any advice to give anybody?
I think that every one of us can certainly buy 10 cents defense stamps. And the more of the defense stamps that are bought, the more $35 million battleships we can put in the race.
And those battle wagons are important. All right, thank you so much, Mr. Richardson. And I've been hearing some reports about your angling capabilities. They tell me you're the largest catcher of minnows on Long Island.
So for you, we have, with the compliments of Roma Culture, a golf water fishing reel and this waterproof duck hunting coat. Thank you very much.
You didn't, I love it. I'll very much indeed. Okay, Wally. Now, folks, no one is closer to everything that goes on than the police officer. He's my friend, and he's your friend, and he is our friend, Patrolman John D. Murray.
How are you, Mr.
How are you, Patrolman Murray? It's you, 7,000, isn't it?
That's right.
What are you doing nowadays? What are you in connection with defense?
I'm assigned to civil defense for 19 feet.
19 feet? Thank you. And what are you supposed to be doing there? What is your...
Well, we accept applications and investigate the enrollees and instruct them into their duties of the L.A. warden.
That's those who volunteer for civilian defense.
That's right.
They ask you a lot of questions, and you give them a lot of answers, and tell them, give them the facts about it.
Yes.
Well, where did you get your information?
Well, I took a special course at the police academy. I read all the books available on the subject, motion pictures and extended messages.
Motion pictures of what?
Of actual bombings on the other side.
Oh, I see. Experiences in London, this, that, and the other.
Yeah. Well, you really, I guess you got a real education out of that, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Tell me about traffic. Traffic is going to be quite a problem if an emergency arises. For instance, I was driving into town earlier this evening, and there was quite a jam. Suppose an error had happened in. Warning.
Well, I think the traffic jam will be alleviated by the North of Air fines that are going to take effect on January 5th.
Double parking and stuff like that.
Yes.
I see. Well, now suppose there are air raid warning sounds, and I'm driving a horse down the street. What am I supposed to do with a horse?
Well, go to the curb with the horse, and I'm driving him, and if there's a...
You mean I'm hitting him out of the way?
I'm hitting him out of the way, and if there's anything handy, tie him to it.
Not
a... Take shelter yourself. Absolutely, remain absolutely calm.
Well, that calm business is always good. Now, suppose I'm walking the dog on a leash and on the street?
Well, as long as you have the dog under control, I think it'd be all right for you to take him with you.
I'm going to tell you, if he's my dog, I'm going to take him with me anyway. Tell me, what should I do now if an alarm sounds?
Well, if an alarm sounds, as I said, take shelter immediately. Remain calm and remain where you are at the shelter until the welfare is given. Above all, remain calm.
I hear that, remain calm. That, I think, is one of the wisest things that anybody ever said. Well, Mr. Coleman, you're married, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
A little makeup overnight kit for Mrs. Murray and a 16-millimeter movie camera for you. I think you have lots of time.
Thank you very much.
Bill Gibbons with a brief but very important reminder.
Friends, when a headache slaps you down, when it's hard to work, thanks because you feel so dull and irritable, you'd give anything for relief, wouldn't you? Well, 10 cents is all a trial packet of Roma Seltzer cost. And believe me, you'll never know the kind of relief Roma Seltzer can give until you try it. So next time you have a headache, step into your nearest drugstore and ask for Roma Seltzer. Just see what quick comfort and relief it gives. See how quickly it helps make you feel more like your old self again. More alert, both mentally and physically. Ready for work or play. Ask for Bromo Seltzer by name. Because remember, only Bromo Seltzer can give you Bromo Seltzer results.
And next week, folks, Buck Pop will broadcast from one of the most vital military posts in the entire continent. The Marine Barracks at Quantico, Virginia, home of the United States Marines.
And the entire broadcast will be dedicated to a gallant body of men that ever wore the Marine uniform, the defenders of Wake Island.
Until then, Wally, Bill Biggins, and Bomo Seltzer and I wish every one of you a very happy new year. And the citizens here with us tonight say...
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Navy needs men urgently to resist attack with full battle strength. Men from 17 to 50 can do their part now by reporting without delay to the nearest Navy recruiting station. Open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Make your best